Okay, so we're recording now. I just want to remind everyone that if you want to access an old class that I've already given, you can dial, let's see, you guys all have the number. Oh, here it is, 610-214-0299, and then they'll ask for the access code, which is the same. It's 704-725, followed by the pound key. And in the office here, we're keeping tabs on each class and which number. They'll ask which number class do you want. Like class number one was fundamentals of Ayurveda. Class number two was on detoxification. Three was the friendly bacteria. Four was on vitamin D. Five was cholesterol. And six was on bone health and a vegan diet. So you could access those classes whenever you want. It looks like this company who's giving the free conference calls will only keep those classes stored for about 6 months. So we've already had them stored somewhere between 3 and 4 months, so just keep that in mind, too. So we'll get started on tonight's class. Tonight we're going to talk more about the spices, because spices in America, we think of them as just something that are flavoring agents, and we like the taste of the spices. Which that's true, they make the food taste good. But in Ayurveda, they think of spices as something that has some healing components, just like the herbs do and the food does. So we're going to go through a list of spices and learn what their healing capabilities are, and I'll even give you some home remedies that you can use to make at home for different symptoms that you might have that might come up.
Nice.
Yeah, I would keep a file on this. These are recipes that I come back to over and over again when someone gets sick. So the first spice is turmeric, and I think this is one of the most important spices. I think that there's been over 250 research articles done just on turmeric alone. And I know when I first met my teacher, Dr. Mishra from India, who's been training me these last 12, 15 years, he told me that they don't have any Alzheimer's in India, or if they do, it's not talked about much. He had never really heard of it. But here, most of our senior citizens get demented at some point, most of them, and then of those, the majority of them have Alzheimer's. So that's quite a lot of Alzheimer's that we have going on here in the United States. So he told me that he felt one of the reasons why was because they have turmeric in the diet every day. And then sure enough, a study was done to see why they don't have so much Alzheimer's there. And sure enough, turmeric was found to prevent the plaques in the brain that that can happen when you have Alzheimer's. So they prevent Alzheimer's. The other thing with turmeric, you could think of it as the best friend to the liver. The liver is the seat of detoxification. You have other organs and glands that can detoxify, like the kidneys or the bowel, even the skin. But the liver is the main seat of detoxification, so it has a big load. So we teach all the patients that we see to have a little bit of turmeric in their diet every day. Now, the active ingredient in turmeric was found out to be curcumin, it's called. So there's two big mistakes a lot of people are making with turmeric. Now that there's been so much research on it, lots of people are taking turmeric capsules in their diet. But what that does, it kind of tortures the liver. It overheats the liver. There's too much turmeric coming in at one time. And now, to make matters even worse, lots of health food stores are carrying this curcumin capsules. In other words, they're taking part from the whole. This is, again, something the ancient doctor said to not do. Don't take part from the whole. Don't isolate an active ingredient out of something. That's what pharmaceuticals are, and that's what vitamin supplements are. So we're trying to show the patients not to do this, recommend you don't do it. And with the turmeric, you don't want to take the active ingredient or the curcumin. If you do, it'll have side effects and be toxic to the liver. So the other thing with turmeric is that it's fat-soluble. So that means you want to cook it into your food. If you're not vegetarian, let's say you have chicken soup, you want to cook it in the stock as you're making the chicken stock. Or you put it in your turkey burgers. Or if you're a vegetarian, you could put it in your dal or rice or vegetables. It just gives the food a slight yellow color, but not much of a taste if you're just putting little pinches in. The other thing, the fact that it is fat-soluble, what that means is that fats will deliver it into your system. So when you're cooking, put it in like you could melt ghee and put the turmeric in the ghee and stir it a little bit and then put your vegetables in, or you could put it in milk. When I first learned Ayurveda, the very first classes that I took were in 1984, and the first wave of doctors had come over from India, and there were a whole panel of these men sitting there teaching us Ayurveda, and on the sidelines, their wives were sitting there drinking whole milk with turmeric in it, warm milk with turmeric. And during the break, I went up and asked them why they were doing that, and they told me that it made their skin really nice because the skin is a reflection of how the liver and the blood are doing, and the turmeric cleans the liver, and the liver cleans the blood. So as a result, you'll have really nice skin if you drink turmeric and milk. And again, it's the fat in the milk that will deliver the turmeric into the cell. So you don't want to just sprinkle it, say, on a salad or something like that. You want to cook it in the food. So that's turmeric. The next is coriander. And coriander is one of those spices that can eliminate the, you know, like when we're breathing in air pollution all day long here living in South Jersey, nasty chemicals are coming in all day. Those types of chemicals actually have the capability of going through those seven tissues. If you guys have been here listening to my classes, we were talking about the seven tissues that were identified by the ancient rishis of India, and that whenever we take food, the food goes systematically through all seven tissues, always in the same sequence. First, it goes into the blood plasma, then the blood, then the muscle, then the fat tissue, then the bone tissue, then the bone marrow, and then the reproductive tissue. And as you go down that sequence, as you go further and further down, the ones like the bone marrow, these are considered the deeper tissues. And what you don't want to happen is that these toxins that we're taking in, you don't want them to wind up in your bone marrow. So when the toxins come in, they follow the same sequence there, like that. They come into the blood plasma, the blood, the muscle. And your body at that point tries to excrete them. Let's say you take an antibiotic or some pharmaceutical or a vitamin. These are all chemicals. The body will excrete a lot of them in the urine, the bowel movement, the sweat. But if these toxins continue, they start to make their way into the deeper tissues. And then we have to figure out how to get them out of there. Coriander is one of those that can go into the bone marrow and retrieve the toxins from there. So that's kind of nice to know. So the other problem is that there are certain chemicals, these man-made chemicals, they automatically go to the bone marrow. And again, if you pollute the bone marrow, you can get serious diseases like MS, autoimmune diseases, cancer, see? Whereas when the chemicals and toxins are more in the blood tissue, you can get things like hives, or something like that. So it's important that we figure out ways to pull these toxins from the deeper tissues. And coriander is one of the ways you can do that. The other way we use coriander is if we have a patient who has a skin condition like a rash or eczema, shingles, psoriasis. What the skin is, it's an organ of elimination. So the skin is showing you that the other organs of elimination, like the liver, are toxic. So the skin is taking over as the major organ of elimination, and it's eliminating very nasty toxins onto the skin, so it gives rashes or whatever. As toxins come out of the bone marrow and they're coming through the skin, they'll give a rash, see? And the more nasty the chemical, remember we had talked about these types of toxins. We talked about four types of toxins. Two of them are very hot. One was called Amavisha. The other was called Garvisha. These are hot toxins, and as they come through the skin, they can give a rash. So what we want to do here is to direct the toxins away from the skin and into the urine, and coriander is used to do that, see, so that the skin can clear up, settle the skin down. Now, and coriander can also help flush the kidneys of toxins. So that these chemicals that we're taking in every day in the air pollution, or all the young kids nowadays, we're giving them so many immunizations. The 10 or so chemicals in their immunizations, like formaldehyde and heavy metals, they go directly into the bone marrow. That's why they're giving so many toxic reactions in the children, like autism, Asperger's. And, we can use coriander to pull those toxins out of there. Now, if you ever feel like you're retaining fluid, I have a recipe where you can take some pieces of asparagus, maybe like six or so pieces of white daikon radish. You could just peel it and slice it like a carrot. Daikon radish, they sell at Whole Foods Market, and it looks like a carrot, but it's bigger and it's white. And you just slice it like a carrot. And then you put about a half a teaspoon of ground coriander into the pot with some soma salt, pepper, and a drizzle of olive oil. And you cover it with water and you let it cook until it's done. It might take 15 or 20 minutes. But whenever you're retaining fluid, just eat that recipe and you'll start to urinate all day and you'll probably lose a couple pounds of water weight. I do that periodically if I feel like I'm retaining fluid. Now the next spice is fennel. And in the body, we have what's called a digestive fire. The ancient doctors called it Agni. That was the Sanskrit name for the digestive fire. And this is a flame, just like on your cooktop. The flame, if it's too high, it's not good. It could burn up the body, like you could get things like ulcers or GERD or gastritis or ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, things like that, hiatal hernia. You hear people have these things. That's when this Agni or digestive fire is too high. If the flame is too low, that's not good either. Just like on your cooktop, it would take forever to cook the food. So if the flame is low, you have dull digestion, you don't have an appetite, you feel like you eat something in the morning and you're still burping it up like at 4 in the afternoon, kind of like that, the food doesn't go anywhere. So you want the flame to be just right. The nice thing about fennel is that it could take a high flame and bring it down to normal, or it could take a low flame and bring it up to normal, see? In fact, we have a recipe if someone's having gas. We tell them to take just whole fennel seeds and you put them in a flat, like a cookie pan, in the oven at 300 degrees for about 20 minutes and bake them. And the other half of the fennel seeds keep raw. Then you mix the baked fennel seeds with the raw fennel seeds and keep them in an airtight container. And you chew a quarter teaspoon of those seeds in between meals 3 or 4 times a day. And these help to get rid of gas. And then it normalizes your digestion or the digestive fire. So fennel is a great remedy. You can also make tea from it. The only contraindication to using fennel is if you're still getting your menstrual cycle and your menstrual cycle is already heavy. Fennel does have some estrogen-like compounds in it, some phytoestrogens they're called. So every so often someone might say that too much fennel, like a fennel tea, could give them a heavy menstrual flow. But if you're not having a cycle anymore or you never had that as a problem, it should be okay. The next spice is cumin. And cumin, what that does, it helps to absorb and use nutrients in the body. So let's say, for instance, people drink water and they feel that the water goes right through them. They drink it and then they urinate. They drink it. They're not really absorbing the water because water has to be digested and assimilated into the cells just like food. So in our office, we give what's called a rehydration drink, which some of you might recognize. This is the drink that we give to people when they're doing their home detox programs because part of that program is you are eating foods that stimulate the kidneys, like daikon radish. We give you a thermos of hot water with coriander seed in it. So the people are urinating, they're flushing their kidneys all day, so we have to rehydrate them. And what we do is we have them take 16 ounces of water, and this is the recipe for a rehydration drink that is kind of like an Ayurvedic Gatorade. You could drink this at any time, especially in the summer when you're sweating a lot or you feel like you need to really absorb your water. Something you could really drink all year round, or if you were vomiting a lot and you need to rehydrate yourself. You take 16 ounces of water, put a pinch of the soma salt that we use. This salt was recommended by the ancient doctors of India. This salt, my teacher calls it stoma salt. We have here in the office. He gets it from mines in India. But it has all the minerals in it. And you put maybe about a half to a teaspoon of organic sugar, granulated. The leaves, a few mint leaves, crushed. And the juice of one lime. Then you take a couple pinches of cumin seed and you lightly toast them in a little pan over an open flame or heat. And then you just kind of pour those out on your countertop and crush them with a spoon. And you stir the cumin seeds into the water with the other ingredients. And the cumin actually helps you absorb the water into your cells. So, and I also want to give you another recipe that this has helped me and my family so much, using cumin. If someone's been vomiting a lot and having diarrhea, you're losing a lot of fluids and electrolytes. So sometimes they almost feel like they can't stop. The diarrhea just won't stop. So what I'm going to give you is a recipe that will stop the diarrhea in a very short amount of time, usually within an hour. What you do, you take 4 ounces of pomegranate juice, 4 ounces of cool water, and an eighth of a teaspoon of ground nutmeg. Now, nutmeg comes already ground up. You could use that, but it also comes where it's not ground up in these little balls that you could buy. They have them at Whole Foods Market in the spice section. If you get the little balls, you could just grind it yourself. It'll have more active ingredients if you grind it yourself, but that's okay. I just take it against a grater and kind of rub it against the grater. And then a half teaspoon of whole cumin seed, again, dry toasted in a small pot, and then you crush it or you could grind it. And you put that in with the pomegranate juice, water, and nutmeg. And you sip on this slowly. The pomegranate juice is very good for diarrhea. The nutmeg tells the brain to stop all that motility, all that movement in the gut. And the cumin seed aids in the absorption of fluid back into the body from the gut. So you've been losing all this fluid with diarrhea, and this will stop that. This would be, you know, some people say, oh, take Limodal or take, you know, go get a prescription from your doctor to stop the diarrhea. This works in a really short time. It's an amazing recipe. And then we would also recommend that you drink the rehydration drink. So, you know, just sip on it slowly after any kind of diarrhea or vomiting. Now, cumin is also used for digestion, too, and it's used in weight loss. It can actually help you lose weight. So you could just cook with ground cumin or toasted cumin in your diet or whole cumin seeds. Now, the next spice is saffron. And saffron has certain antioxidants in it. You could actually cook saffron with milk. It needs to be, it's also another one of those fat-soluble spices. Whenever you see a recipe for saffron, they're usually telling you to soak it in milk or cook it in milk. What I do is when I cook my oatmeal in the morning, I throw my cinnamon stick in there because the cinnamon stick helps you digest the carbohydrate in the milk. And then I put cardamom pods, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Cardamom helps you digest the protein in the milk. But then I always throw in a couple strands of saffron. Now, saffron's really expensive. And at Whole Foods Market, you get a few strands for about $6. But you can go to the Indian markets, which you're all familiar with now because you're going there to get different vegetables and whatever for our cleanses. And in the Indian markets, they have it in these little boxes where you can get Spanish saffron, and it's a lot less expensive, but it's the higher quality saffron. And that box usually lasts me a month or two. But saffron in milk helps to prevent Parkinson's. So if you know anyone who has that or if you have that that runs in your family, you might want to start now preventing it so it doesn't come on.
What happens if
what's that?
Oh, I was going to say, so do you mix that in with your grain in the morning?
Yeah, you could put it right in with your grain, your milk, just throw it in.
Like a couple strands?
Yeah, you're even more like a pinch of it, might be 5 or 6
a
strands.
A pinch.
Mm-hmm, a little pinch. You don't need a lot.
What about for someone who already has Parkinson's disease? Can it help? And how? And in what way?
Well, it would help. All these things are better at preventing. Once you have something like that, it usually means some of these cells have died off that produce, you know, a certain neurotransmitter like dopamine or whatever. Saffron is one that can help, but we have an herb called Macuna puriens that helps even more. It helps the brain make more dopamine. But this, you know, can also help too. Just not as much, I don't think, as the actual herb.
Okay.
But I think over a lifetime, if you're taking saffron, it's probably pretty good at preventing it.
Marianne, would you use this at night, like with your? Because
yeah.
I always make the milk with the with the turmeric and the coriander.
Yeah,
and the,
saffron.
Could I throw that in
brain.
With that?
Yeah, it's very calming to the brain. See, milk should always be cooked with spices. Here, we just take it out of the refrigerator and have it cold. It's very channel clogging that way, because the fat in the milk, you want to keep the fat in there. The fat will bring the calcium into your bones, but since there's so much fat, you have to bring it to a boil and thin out the fat so that it can go from the channels and absorb in the cells. And then the warm milk itself, when you boil milk, it forms tryptophan, so that kind of calms you down too. But these are good spices to cook in milk: cinnamon, cardamom, turmeric, saffron, those types of things. Whenever you see, when Dr. Mishra stays with me, he's always taking milk. We go through so much milk when he's here, and he's always cooking it with spices. I never see him just take milk plain like we do here in this country, because you need some help digesting it, and these spices help you digest it. And then on the other hand, the fat in the milk helps you deliver the spices to where they have to go. Now, the next one is cinnamon stick. And see, we're recommending the whole spice, like instead of ground cinnamon. Once you grind it, you're going to lose some of the active ingredients. So if you want to throw a cinnamon stick in your oatmeal in the morning, or some grain that you're cooking with milk, because it does help you digest the carbohydrate in the milk. But what it also does is it increases the pancreas' sensitivity to insulin by 20%. You might know people who get insulin-resistant diabetes, meaning they're making insulin, but yet they're getting resistant to it. Like, they're making it, but the blood sugar continues to go high. See, insulin lowers the blood sugar. So in this case, cinnamon stick helps you to stay sensitive to your insulin so that it always works for you. So, for instance, I use a cinnamon stick every day. My mother had diabetes. I want to make sure that my body is reacting to my insulin my whole life. So I'm using that to prevent diabetes, you know, if you know that's somewhere in your genes. So now the next spice is cilantro. And cilantro is actually what you get when you grow coriander seeds. I don't know if you know that. And what it does, it chelates heavy metals. So here we're breathing in sometimes, you know, heavy metals and the air pollution and mercury. They're putting heavy metals in all the flu shots and all the immunizations they give children. And cilantro can go in there and chelate the heavy metals out. So cilantro is one of those things that you chop up and you could put it in the food once the food's done cooking. Or you could make, what I do myself, I make little, we call them chutneys from it, where you take... I could give you a recipe that I like to use a lot, cilantro mint chutney. You take 2 cups of packed fresh cilantro leaves and 1 cup packed fresh mint leaves, 1/3 cup of whole plain yogurt, and 1 tablespoon of lime juice freshly squeezed, and 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, and 2 pinches of the soma salt. And you just process all those ingredients together in a food processor until smooth, about 20 seconds. You might have to scrape down the bowl, the work bowl, 1 or 2 times. But I take that a lot and use it. Sometimes if you're a vegetarian, you could stir it into your dal. It's really tasty, or into your grains, your rice, or into, sometimes I'll make paneer and I'll saute it. and I'll put it, mix this chutney in with my grains, and I'll put the paneer in there. And sometimes I cook greens like spinach or chard, and I'll mix the paneer and the greens with the grains and this chutney. So you could use it to flavor things. It tastes good on chicken. You make turkey burgers, and you have, say, like a whole grain bun or something. You could put this chutney on the bread or the bun and then put a turkey burger on top in lieu of maybe like ketchup and mustard, which is overheating to the liver, see. So that's one recipe. But you could use cilantro in so many ways, just chopping the cilantro in and stirring it in to your dal at the end of the cooking. And over time, if there's any heavy metals there, it'll chelate it out. I think sometimes people think, well, these are spices. You know, how much can they do? I've heard that we have this chelating agent called whatever, EDTA. A lot of the patients coming in have undertaken chelation therapy to pull these heavy metals out. Or we see a lot of autistic kids that come here, and they see what are called DAN doctors, Defeat Autism Now, and they're using these intense heavy metal chelating agents. And several children have died from those chelating agents, so we warn the patients not to do that. But when you test these children, they all have the heavy metals in their blood and their brain and their urine from all the shots they've received. So what we're using here is a formula made from cilantro. It's called Rasa Sodica Cream, and we have the Rasa Sodica Drops, and it's just that cilantro. And we've had people that has shown you know, lots of mercury in their blood, and after giving them cilantro for a few months, the heavy metals leave the body. They're gone in the blood work. So don't think of it as like a subtle thing. It actually works really well. And you could go online and see all the research that's been done on using cilantro for chelating heavy metals. The next spice is fenugreek. And fenugreek is also good for the liver. For nursing mothers, we always tell them to increase their breast milk, to boil 2 quarts of water for 5 minutes, put it in a thermos, and put a pinch of fennel and fenugreek in there. And just by sipping the 2 quarts of water all day with the fennel and the fenugreek, it increases the breast milk. But fenugreek is another one of those spices that I try to use a lot because, again, that can also prevent diabetes. And it's also good for weight loss. See, so like if you want to lose some weight, you could make a little tea with it, but just put a pinch in there. Don't use it too concentrated. You don't want to put a whole teaspoon, for instance, in a cup of hot water because it's a little heating. And it also has the capability of not only burning fat, but it can clean the fat tissue. You know how we had talked about the 7 tissues, and any one of them can take on toxins. So when we see toxins in the fat tissue, when that happens, for example, your cholesterol could go up, or you could be gaining weight for no good reason, then we use fenugreek to clean the fat tissue. Now, the next one, you might not be as familiar with. These are curry leaves, spelled C-U-R-R-Y, and I've also seen them spelled K-A-R-I. Curry leaves. These you would have to get at an Indian market. And Dr. Mishra taught me how to use these, and it was one of the first things he taught me, and I actually love the taste of them. And you could just throw these in your dal, or you could cook with them into different vegetables. There's a lot of recipes using those if you have any Indian cookbooks. But they lend a certain kind of curry flavor to the food that is pretty appealing. But this is also very good for the liver and for diabetes. Especially if you know anyone that has diabetes, they want to be cooking bitter gourd. That's a vegetable. And I know it's not a spice, and we're talking about spices here. But since we're talking about diabetes, I can't resist the temptation but to tell you about bitter gourd. It's also known as bitter melon or Karela, K-A-R-E-L-A. All the Indian markets carry this almost all the time. And this is the number one food for diabetes. It lowers the blood sugar a lot. And in fact, I decided I would try to eat it one day. I wanted to lose weight, and I was trying to eat a little bit every day, but I couldn't do it because my blood sugar got so low, because I don't have diabetes. But I remember thinking, boy, if anyone had diabetes and they're eating this, their blood sugar would go way down. So especially if you're cooking with curry leaves and bitter gourd. Now, the next spice is cloves. Cloves are one of those things that, let's say you have a patient who has a lot of pitta, and a lot of you are my patients, so you understand some of these words now. There's vata, pitta, kapha. Pitta is the element of like fire and water or heat. So let's say you have a patient who's got a lot of pitta or burning in the digestive system, but on the other hand, they have a lot of congestion. So you want to burn. Lots of people will drink things like ginger tea, because ginger can burn congestion, you know, when you have a cold. But for the pittas, it's too much heat, so we can't use ginger. So in cases like that where the person has a lot of burning, a lot of pitta, a strong digestive fire, but yet we have to cut through their congestion and burn it out, we use cloves. Or there are some people, let's say they have a pitta constitution, and you feel their pulse and their channels are all clogged. They have a lot of sticky ama or partially digested food stuck in the channels. You see it a lot with vegans because they're eating a lot of soy. Soy is especially channel clogging. In fact, it's so channel clogging, when we feel a pulse that's completely clogged, we call it a tofu pulse in Ayurveda because eating a lot of soy is very channel clogging. So if you have someone who's got a lot of channel clogging and you need to burn that, like roto-rooter it through the channels, but they have a lot of pitta, then you can use cloves. Because the ancient doctors said they can open the channels, but once they come into the body, they have a cooling effect. So that's kind of an unusual thing. So let's say you're a pitta type and you want to make a tea, you have a cold, but you're a little afraid of ginger, if it might burn, you can use cloves, like in the tea or in your cooking. You could throw it in your dal. The next one is basil. And basil, there's a couple species of basil. The one that we're using in our office here would be holy basil or basil. That's 5 times stronger than our sweet basil. But you could use either one. It's a little hard to find holy basil. But everyone in India has a holy basil plant in their house. And the reason is basil has that capability of taking away negative vibrations, not only from people. You ever have someone, you're around someone, you feel just this really strange vibe from them, or right away negative vibe, or you just don't like being around them. Or if they come to your house and then they leave and you can feel that vibe, vibration in your house, well, the basil plant can absorb that nasty vibration. And not
only... Where do you
only,
get that plant, Marianne?
Holy basil, well, it's a little hard to find. You could probably find it online, but you could grow your own basil, you know. This time of year, it's pretty easy. I found that there's a, up in Princeton, there's a little, like a market that carries all kinds of herbs up there. I don't know if you're familiar with Princeton, but I haven't been able to find it down our way. Now, I could be wrong about that. Maybe I didn't look enough. But I did find a lot of holy basil plants up there, and I bought them. And they were like our basil. They lasted through the summer. Then I tried to bring them indoors, and then they died once there were less hours of sunlight during the day. So basil helps not only the vibrations from people that are negative, but also the electromagnetic frequencies that we're all being overexposed to, like the cell phone towers, or if we have, like right now I have a patient undergoing radiation for prostate cancer. So I'm teaching him how to use basil, which I'll show you guys in a minute. But basil is used for the brain, the lungs. It's like the number one herb that they put in all the lung formulas because it gives good immunity to the lungs. Like if you catch a cold and you've been taking a lot of basil or making a tea of basil, that, or if you have a cold, then the basil will help the congestion and it prevents colds from going into the lungs. Keeps your immune system strong. So let's say that you have to work on the computer a lot. You could just drink water that has a couple basil leaves in it. And the basil leaves will, some of that vibration will get into the water, and as you drink that water, that will absorb the electromagnetic frequencies out of you. Because I don't know if you remember the class that I taught on the 4 types of toxins. It was early on. I think it was the 2nd class I taught. But of the four types, electromagnetic radiation is the worst because that one can do the most damage very quickly. You know, that's why when you're X-rayed, they just put you under the X-ray machine quick and then you're out because it can do a lot of damage because electromagnetic frequencies go into the space element. And it's the space element that our body is composed mainly of. I don't know if you know that, but all the electrons in your cells, they're circulating around a nucleus. And most of that cell is empty space, which is kind of like a bizarre concept. But when you study chemistry and you learn these things, it makes you realize that what our bodies mainly are empty space, and then the space manifests into something. And it goes from that unmanifest field into the manifest, and it's that space element that's full of potential. You know, they call it the unified field in physics, and that can manifest. So that space element has to be intelligent in order to create, you know, good functioning cells in your body or intelligent cells that know what they're doing. But these electromagnetic frequencies get mixed up in the space element. See, they mix in with the prana. The prana is the combination of the vibration from the sun and the moon. And so this vibration, which is very pure cosmic energy that forms our whole body and really everything in creation, gets polluted from these EMFs or electromagnetic frequencies. So here we have a way to help absorb them out of our bodies by just taking some basil in water, or you can eat it in your diet. You could even take a handful of basil leaves and put it in your bathtub and fill it up and just soak in the tub like that if you've been exposed to a lot of frequencies at work. And every day I get patients in who have a lot of electromagnetic frequency exposure. Just today I had someone who has a very serious disease, and she's a teenager. She's on the computer a lot, and I could feel in her pulse that there was no intelligence in the pulse at all. The cells had no idea what they were doing because there was so much radiation, see, there. And her mother was telling me all the different symptoms that she has. Her autonomic nervous system doesn't work well, and she doesn't know if she's supposed to breathe or not. See, the nervous system automatically does these things, but the EMFs are affecting her whole nervous system. So the doctors are treating each of the symptoms around the body, when really what we need to do is get rid of the radiation in her body, see, because it's upsetting the intelligence that all the cells have. So that's basil. It's one of those really wonderful spices, and I think everybody really likes the taste of it, too. It's another one of those things I kind of like to make a pesto whenever I have things like burgers or chicken. I'll put basil pesto on the sandwich, and then, you know, in lieu of, again, ketchup and mustard and things like that. The next spice is ginger. We were just talking a little bit about ginger. And the main thing that ginger does is that it burns ama. So, again, ama in Sanskrit means partially digested food. And, again, when you eat food, the goal of eating the food is that the food goes through channels. You're swallowing it down the esophagus, goes into the stomach, the small intestines. Then from there, it's absorbed into the bloodstream, and it travels through those channels, arteries, arterioles, capillaries. And what you want is that the food absorbs from these channels across a very delicate cell wall and absorbs into your cells. Then once the food's in your cells, then your cells make whatever it is the cells make, energy or different hormones or neurotransmitters, whatever. What you don't want to happen is that the food, for whatever reason, has a hard time digesting, and it remains stuck out in the channel. It never broke down to the point where it could cross the cell wall and get into the cells. So the ancient doctor said the food was sitting semi-transformed or semi-digested, stuck out in the channels. And then the ama sits there, and it's clogging the channels. So we can use ginger to burn that ama. It's like sticky. But again, you have to be careful. If you have a lot of pitta, then we would recommend cloves. A good example of ama clogging a channel would be a formula-fed baby. See, the breast milk is very light. The babies take the breast milk. It absorbs automatically into their cells and is very nourishing. But the formulas, we're trying to mimic nature there. We make these heavy formulas, and the babies can't digest them. And then they start to clog their little ear channels, the little canals in the ears. And then they start to get ear infections, one ear infection after the other. So in America, the doctors would give one antibiotic after the other for the babies, but they're not familiar with the concept of this ama. And it's the ama that's sitting there, and it starts to get infected, see? So the better thing would be, you know, get them off the formula, get them on food as soon as they can, try to get that ama out of there so they don't keep reinfecting. Ginger is also good for the appetite. Sometimes I'll have a patient who says they have no appetite. So we'll tell them to make a thermos of hot water, put some slices of ginger root in it, one or two, and sip that. And then pretty soon the appetite comes back. Because if you don't have an appetite and you're eating the food's going to turn into ama. See how it works? So we don't want that. We want to make sure that your flame is high enough so that you can burn the food. If the flame is dull, the agni or the digestive fire is dull, then you make ama from your food, see? Now, if the flame is too high, if you guys have been listening to my classes, do you have any idea what would happen if you eat food and the flame is too high? What would form from that? Anybody have an idea?
Is it ama vicia?
Yeah, that's good. Because when I learned that, I couldn't think of that answer. That's pretty good. Ama vicia is very hot reactive ama. So you don't want the flame too high because ama vicia, while regular ama clogs the channels, ama vicia is like a hot type of ama. This one can cause like autoimmune diseases, cancer. It's more reactive than regular ama. We've all seen the effects of ama vicia if someone had a rash or shingles or psoriasis, little children that get eczema. That's ama vicia coming through the skin, see? The flame's too high, so we have to lower the flame. See, we could lower the flame with coriander, fennel, see? So it starts to snowball when you learn all this stuff. You start to become more and more familiar with how to do things. So ginger can burn ama. Then we have nutmeg, which we were talking a little bit about before. Nutmeg is very calming to the brain. It's not something that you want to take regularly, though. It could be a little too much. But we use it a lot, mainly if the person has diarrhea. We give them that recipe, and we have these nutmeg glyceride drops here. Because it not only calms the brain, it tells the brain to slow up the movement in the gut or the motility in the gut if someone has diarrhea, and then automatically the gut will slow down. So, for instance, in my ulcerative colitis patients who are having a flare-up of their colitis or people who have diarrhea, they're having loose bowel movements for too long, it won't go away. Right away, we use nutmeg to calm all that down. It doesn't take very long. It just slows it up, brings it back to normal. And again, it would be better if you got the whole nutmeg and you grate it. And then we have nutmeg glyceride drops here that the patients could just put in water. The next spice is cardamom. And this one, you see those little green cardamom pods. They have them at Whole Foods Market. And inside those pods are little black seeds. They also sell the little black seeds taken out of the pods. And they also sell it where the black seeds are ground up, like ground cardamom. We usually recommend you get the cardamom pods because, again, once you grind up the seeds, then it will lose some of its active ingredients. But cardamom is very good for nausea, especially if you have you mix it in with some ginger. You know how people take ginger ale when they're nauseous? That's because we know about ginger in America, but we don't know so much about cardamom. But I'll give you this recipe here if you've had any nausea and vomiting. You want to boil a quart of water for 5 minutes and put it in a thermos and add one pinch of whole coriander seeds. And you take two cardamom pods and you put them in a small pan and dry toast them just a little bit. And a small piece of peeled fresh ginger root, like a slice of it, and put that in the thermos and take little sips of it periodically to help control the nausea and the vomiting. So cardamom is used a lot for nausea. It also helps protein metabolism. That's why they recommend it in the milk, helps you digest the protein in the milk. And you could use it in lots of different recipes, too. It gives a really nice flavor to the milk, too. And I have another recipe. This is a bone-nourishing recipe. Now you take 16 ounces of slightly toasted sesame seeds. You could just take them and kind of toast them. 2 ounces of slightly toasted fenugreek seeds. See, the fenugreek will help you digest the fat in the sesame seeds. And 10 green cardamom pods. You could keep the pod on. 10 black peppercorns. And 1/4 teaspoon of soma salt. So again, it's 16 ounces of slightly toasted sesame seeds, 2 ounces of slightly toasted fenugreek seeds, 10 green cardamom pods, 10 black peppercorns, and 1/4 teaspoon of soma salt. You grind everything up like in a spice grinder and add twice the amount of granulated organic sugar, like the evaporated cane juice that's granulated. They have it at Whole Foods Market. And store it in an airtight container and use a tablespoon or so in cooking. Or you could eat it just alone as it is. But the sesame seeds are very good for nourishing the bones. And the cardamom in there will help you with the protein and the digestion of the protein in the sesame seeds, and the fenugreek will help with the digestion of the fat in the sesame seeds. The next one is ajwain seeds, A-J-W-A-I-N. And what these do, sometimes we have those pulses like I was telling you about where the person's pulse shows extreme channel clogging, especially if they've been eating a lot of soy or tofu, or drinking a lot of soy milk. Some of the hormones they're giving women, they're called bioidentical hormones. Some of those are based on soy, so the women are taking these and their channels get seriously clogged. Because the fat in the soy milk, our bodies can't bring into the cells, so it ends up getting stuck out in the channels. Then you wind up with seriously clogged channels. And I think in one of the calls where we were talking about cholesterol, and I was describing how cholesterol wasn't such a big problem as we're making it out to be, especially the forms that we know we can absorb into the cells, like milk we can absorb or ghee. And I was describing a patient of mine who ate a lot of tofu and soy, and he dropped dead of a heart attack at a young age because his channels were severely clogged. When you find channels clogged like that, that are very severely clogged, you can use ajwain seeds to open them up. You can make a tea of it. They also open the urinary channels. So all of you who have done our home detox or our home Panchakarma program, you'll see in there, you're making a thermos of hot water with coriander seed and ajwain seeds. And the ajwain seeds dilate the urinary channels, and the coriander seeds flush the kidneys. The other way we use ajwain is to purify breast milk. Sometimes the mothers are breastfeeding the babies, and they'll say the babies have they regurgitate the milk, or they're saying they have acid reflux. That's like the latest thing they're saying with babies now. And then they put them on acid reflux medicine they would put an adult on. But what's happening when the babies are throwing up the milk, it's because the mother's breast milk is too toxic. She should have done some cleansing before she became pregnant, but in this country they never tell you to do that. So, or she could be eating some food that's, whenever you eat food and you're breastfeeding, it immediately goes into the breast milk first, and then it goes into the 7 tissues. You know how we talked about those 7 tissues, the blood, plasma, the blood, muscle, fat, bone, and so on? Well, food goes in those, always in that same sequence, but if you're nursing, it goes into the breast milk first, see? So you always nourish the baby first. So if you're eating foods that aren't so good for you, that's going in the breast milk and it's polluting the breast milk. So So we have the mothers make tea of ajuan seeds to purify their breast milk. And then we also put some wild amla tablets in there that also helps to detoxify. Ajuan isn't the only thing, but I'm just showing you different ways ajuan can be used. So that's the end of my class for tonight. It might be a little shorter than the other classes, but did you guys have any questions on the spices at all?
Marianne, I do have a question about, you were talking about soy and ginger and babies and how they get congestion, things like that. And I think I mentioned, I know somebody whose baby was put on soy and has had problems ever since. Once you get the child off the soy, is there something that you could give him to help break up the congestion?
Well, the main thing is get off the soy. Is that, I couldn't hear what you were saying before. Is that what you were saying? You're going to take them off the soy milk?
Yeah, take them off the soy formula.
Yeah, the soy formula, I mean. You have to do that. The thing in America is that if babies aren't tolerating something well, they put them on formulas right away, like if there's a problem with breastfeeding. They actually don't do that in India. Dr. Mishra told me from the time a baby's born, if they can't take the mother's milk, they put them on cow's milk. And he doesn't really understand why we don't do that here in America, but they have this phobia of milk here that extends into the whole life. And so what they would do is just put them on milk. So I think you were mentioning the baby was 11 months old, is that it? And then
yes.
She only had one more month to go. Yeah. I mean, really, that baby could have milk at this point, but if she's not willing to do that because she's going to listen to the pediatrician, then she's got to change the formula. But now, I wouldn't just make tea. The baby's little. If the baby took the baby to me, I would give the baby glyceride drops, maybe of ginger, and, you know, I'd do different things to open those channels back up.
Okay.
But I wouldn't make, like, a ginger tea or something like that. For adults, I'm showing you, like, you could do that, but
sure.
Or I might give the baby drops of ajuan. I'd have to test and see what needs to be done.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Marianne, you mentioned the fenugreek. It's good for weight loss, and the cumin. Can you make a tea out of both?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it for you because it heats the blood.
I was thinking of my husband.
Oh, him? Yeah, he could.
He's
do
got
that,
some
yeah.
weight.
Yeah, put a pinch of each in, let him drink, you know, like a quart of hot water with those in. Yeah.
And toast the cumin, right? Toast it and
You don't have to. You don't have to toast it just for weight loss.
Just kind of boil it and put
boil
it in.
Yeah, boil water, put in a pinch of cumin seed, a pinch of fenugreek, and that will burn the fat. See, for someone who has a lot of amavishya hot toxins, a lot of pitta, you don't want to be having too much of that because it burns fat, so you don't want to be burning too much.
I see what you're saying. Sure.
Sometimes I'll do that when I want to lose a few pounds. I'll make a tea with fenugreek in it, and then I start to feel burning after a few weeks. I've lost the weight anyway, and I stop it when I feel the burn, like my stomach.
What do you feel? What
just
kind
like
of burn?
Burning in your stomach, just a little burning.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's not real severe or anything. But
yeah,
if you pay attention to all your body's cues, you'll start to know, I can do this for a while, and then I stop it, or I could do that for a while and stop it if you feel any discomfort.
Is there any of these spices that help a toothache? I happen to have one. I wondered if there's something here.
Wouldn't
you
clove help?
The what?
Clove?
Yeah, you could try the cloves.
Try the cloves?
They used to make clove oil. Remember when you were little putting that in your
Yes.
I wonder if they still make that. I guess you could try to put clove in
there. I think they call it
ambasol. What's that?
I think they may call it ambasol.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, you could try that.
Oh, the ambasol. I got you.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a question about cooking with Ayurvedic, with Indian spices. I make a lot of curries, and many of the recipes I'm using, it'll call for cumin, also mustard seeds, green chili, ginger, coriander, red chili, sometimes curry leaves. Is it okay to use just an assortment of those, or should one be concerned about, for instance, mustard seed possibly having too much heat?
Mustard seed does have heat.
For their particular constitution.
Yeah, it depends on your constitution. If you know you have a lot of pitta, then don't use mustard seeds too much. Actually, the worst spice is asafoetida. Don't use that at all. That one creates a lot of heat in the liver. Dr. Mishra actually recommends people don't use that at all. But
I've been using that a lot.
I would cut that one out. You could use ginger for your heat. He even says even though chilies are hot, if you think you can handle them, then you could take them. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't overdo it either. And if you feel any burning, cut back on them. Obviously.
Mm-hmm. I've been de-seeding the green chilies, and that makes
helps.
The flavor there, but not so much of the heat.
Uh-huh. Okay. You could do that. Because they still have, Dr. Mishra says, a little soma in them. Soma is that cooling lunar energy. They mm-hmm. still have a little bit of that. So
the asafoetida has no beneficial properties at all.
Everything has some benefit. Like onions and garlic are like that. They have some health benefits. But the ancient doctors said they also were bad for your health in that, when they're hot and spicy like that, the sulfur in the onions and garlic, for example, and probably in the asafoetida, they can burn the friendly bacteria just like an antibiotic, you know. A lot of these sulfa drugs burn the friendly bacteria. But more importantly, the ancient doctors said if you were on a spiritual path, that onions and garlic could burn the neurons in the brain that give you higher states of consciousness.
Oh, wow.
Right. That's the very reason why I don't use onions and garlic, but asafoetida is sort of a similar taste to onions.
Right. A lot of people use that to replace the onions and garlic, but I don't think they'll burn the neurons in the brain. That's not the issue with them, but Dr. Mishra says it overheats the liver, and he feels that everyone in America, the liver is so corrupted and so overheated from so many acid toxins going through it in a lifetime. He said in India it's not a big problem, but here it's the number one problem that everyone has, so he doesn't recommend asafoetida here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. So our next class is going to be Monday, July 18th from 7 to 8 p.m., and, again, if you want to access any of those classes, feel free to do so. I get emails every day. I see people are accessing them. It always makes me happy to see because I think you guys should learn as much as you can so that if you're well-armed with knowledge when you go to these doctors and they want to do some terrible thing, you'll know better than to do that. So,
Miriam, what was the telephone number again?
For the playback of the classes, 610-214.
Uh-huh.
0299.
Thank you.
And the access code is the same, 704-725, followed by the pound key.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
Marianne, another great class. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night.